Ladies and gentlemen, I welcome you to Soldier Speaks English. I'm your host, Adil Raja. And today, once again, I've got with me my dear friend, Tony Gosling, leading investigative journalist, a whistleblower in the UK. He's joining us from Bristol. Hello, Tony. How are you?
Hi, Adil. Thanks very much for asking me. Not too bad. Still alive. Can't complain.
Oh, that's good. That's good. But a lot of devastation is occurring around us in the world right now. So I'll just, you know, get to the point straight away, Tony. What is Iran war all about, in your opinion?
Well, look, I think it's been interesting to see the different factions in the world leadership and the way they're dealing with this, particularly in the West, because I think we've got two completely different factions. One is an elite who are almost like you might call the puppet masters, the people who are very tied in with the unlimited access to money. They also are people who use wars like this in order to make money out of the financial casino system. So I would suggest to you, somebody like Mark Carney, the Canadian Prime Minister, he's one of those who is almost aloof and elite to all of this. Whereas Donald Trump, now he's being manipulated. I think he's being prodded. He's being pushed. He's being cajoled. He's possibly even being blackmailed into doing what they want. So if you can see it as a simple analogy as the puppeteers above and the puppet masters below, and quite often we don't see, the public don't see, we wouldn't recognize them if we pass them in the street, some of the top puppet masters above, because they don't court publicity. They're very shy. And so I think if you're looking at why Trump has done this now, it's quite obvious from what Mark Rubio was saying, that he was cajoled into it or elbowed into it or possibly blackmailed into it. We don't really know why exactly he jumped by Netanyahu and by the Israelis. The Israelis let the Americans know they were about to attack Iran because they thought that Iran was going to attack them. And they convinced Trump to attack Iran, a preemptive strike. So in other words, this is totally illegal under international law. What they're doing is they believe that someone might be about to strike, and so they're striking them first. So this is not just illegal, it's also totally unjustified morally and in the news and the press. And so this is how, what I mean is, you've got Carney on one side saying, I don't want to be part of this. But actually, I think he's one of the people who is an insider who will be making money from it. So these kind of people will waft around being the peacemakers whilst they watch someone like Trump getting into trouble. And he's getting into massive trouble straight away. He doesn't really have the intellect and the grasp of the situation. And so he's had a massive humiliation with this Gulf of Hormuz business, where scores of countries that he was thinking were his allies are just simply ditching him and saying, well, we're not interested in you know helping you in the Straits of Hormuz. His aircraft carriers are not in a good situation. They've had to steam away with the attacks from Iran. And so I think Trump basically is out of his depth, but what he's doing is effectively just simply doing what Netanyahu wants. And don't forget, he as a president, he got elected to do the opposite to this. So he's also losing lots and lots of his MAGA base, the people that voted for him in the United States, many who were disillusioned with voting, thought, well, here's a guy to stop these foreign wars. Let's vote for him and see how we get on. And of course, they've now been totally betrayed. Trump is blaming the press. This is some of the latest stuff today. He is just blaming the media, which is ridiculous. I mean, to a certain extent, he was right, I think, in the Biden era. To talk about the fake news, to point at CNN and people like that who were, I think, faking news. But now the tables are turned on him because he is actually being made a fool of, I think, by the Israelis. And of course, in the meantime, we've got what is potentially going to be one of these forever wars has now been started, because Trump doesn't want to climb down. And Netanyahu doesn't want to let him. So, we haven't even mentioned the casualties, the individuals, the people caught up in this. It's something that I think many of us, and I was working at the BBC back in 1990, at the time of the first Gulf War, we could see, many of us could see, that there was this intervention that the United States was preparing in the Middle East to back up Israel, and that they were trying to start to frame a kind of holy war. And this is where we get to your theological points, because quite clearly there is a very important religious element to this. People's hearts and minds are being pulled and pushed around. The idea is we're going to try and corral people through their spiritual beliefs, through their belief in God, etc., to get on one side or the other of this battle. So that, I think, is in a nutshell what's been going on. And I don't see this ending anytime soon, because it's going to mean that that Trump will have to climb down. He's not that kind of guy. He's very egotistical. He wants to see some sort of victory. And in a way, the most sensible thing Iran can now do is to try and give him some sort of small victory that he can say, oh, we've won and now we're going to stop. Because that might actually take the pressure off of the United States to do what the Israelis have always wanted to do, which is to have this religious war. They call it a religious war with Islam.
Tony, talking about theology. So I've seen these, you know, hordes of very nice, particularly dressed Jewish fellows waving some yellow kinds of flags and roaming in the streets of London. And once you ask them, what is the flag about? They will tell you that the Messiah is coming back. So that is from the Jewish perspective. Then there is a perspective of Antichrist from the Christian perspective as well. And then there's a perspective of Dajjal in the Muslim perspective. So all the monolithic religions have got this end of time philosophy going around. So what is your opinion about this end of times philosophy revolving around this war of U.S. and Israel with Iran? Do you think it is we are heading towards the end of times?
Look, I'm not sure about that. But one thing's for certain, the Jewish people you're talking about, if they really are honestly in their hearts Jewish, because I think we have to distinguish between, with all of these monotheistic faiths, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, many people put on the cloak and the coats of these faiths, but they have actually no real heartfelt love of God. And they are using this as a kind of gravy train. There's money around. For example, as I'm sure you know, a lot of mercenaries, they wave the ISIS flag. This is supposed to be Islam, but they're being paid to do it. And so this, we have to really distinguish between these different types of faith. So this is the faith in your heart and the faith in your pocket, if you want. And so, yeah, the Israelis in London, or the what we might call Jews, Zionists in London, talking about the coming of the return of the Messiah. Well, it won't be the return. It will be the Jewish Messiah. That's effectively what they're saying, is because they've turned their back on Christ and Jesus 2,000 years ago. And today, obviously, this is something that people do in their hearts. They're saying that this will be the Messiah, and that Jesus was some sort of fake 2,000 years ago, and that this is him. Now, you know, there are a lot of theologians out there looking at this who I would recommend, people like David Livingstone, the Islamic writer who's written the book on transhumanism. It's called Transhumanism: The History of a Dangerous Idea, which is extremely good. It's looking at the abuse of technology, the mimicking of humanity and humanness and the brain through technology, the idea of creating life, genetic engineering, all this sort of thing associated with transhumanism. And what he is suggesting, and many others have suggested too, I would probably agree with them, is that the Messiah they're talking about is in fact the Antichrist in Christianity. So the idea is someone, a human being, arrives on the scene. They make out that they're the great peacemaker, even though they're not telling you that they've helped create the war in the first place. And so that individual it will appeal to some people, will not appeal to others. So whoever it happens to be, I can't tell you. But all I can say is that there's a lot of similarities between the Christian view and the Muslim view on what's happening. So they look at both of the faiths, look at individuals, or they prophesy about individuals on both sides of this ultimate battle. So we're talking here, if you look at the book of Daniel and you look at Revelation, it indicates that a 7-year war will happen. But after 3.5 years, there'll be a kind of false peace agreement brokered by this Antichrist character. And at the end of all of this, after the full 7 years, there'll be the Battle of Armageddon, which Pete Hegseth has been talking about, which is really rather worrying. And that will be the actual second coming of Christ, of Jesus. And actually, the Muslims agree on a lot of this with the Dajjal. As many people know, this is the Islamic evil figure, and the Mahdi, who's the good figure in Islam. So I think what we might see happening now is this may start to play out. I mean, it's really difficult to know if the war will be switched off fairly soon. And it'd be lovely to think that it would be, but knowing the mentality of these people, and I'll explain why I don't think that's going to happen, is because if you look at those individuals, particularly the Israelis, who've been involved in this horrific human sacrifice of 100,000 or so innocent Gazan people, many of them children, almost half of them children, you can see that there's no real going back from that. So these people, if they start to sort of back off and say, let's just return to normal, then they're going to have their collars felt, Adil. They're going to go to prison. They're going to go to jail. They'll possibly be executed for these crimes. And so they're trying what they call a flight forward, which is just to kind of keep going. Even though in a moral sense and a legal sense, they've lost, they have to sort of keep going forward. Sun Tzu talked about this. In The Art of War, he says that if you have a battle going on, as you may know this as a former military person, if you have a battle going on and your side has a river behind them, that means they can't retreat. They fight all the harder. And that's what's happened with Israel. They cannot now retreat because of the crimes they've been committing in Gaza, particularly, or other places. And so I think that's what we're really looking at. And it's going to be ultimately, I think, a battle between those who believe in this kind of Zionist idea of this new they will call a Messiah and actually the traditional honest faiths. And those, there's also another fight going on, and that is this idea of yin yang and balance. So the monotheistic faiths all have a similar view of good and evil. They see the world in those terms. Whereas the Eastern religions, you know, the sort of the Beatles that were the Beatles became got into in their later phases. And of course, this we're talking here about mainly about Hinduism, about a bit of slightly to do with Buddhism, etc. The Eastern faiths are much more to do with balance. Right. So there is a contradiction, a very important contradiction in these faiths. Many of them embrace similar ideas like the sanctity of marriage, the sanctity of life. But if you're talking about, you know, the balance between good and evil, well, how can you balance good and evil? If you're a moral person, you don't. You can't. You have to go on the side of good against evil. And in fact, Jeremy Paxman, the famous BBC television interviewer, retired a few years ago, he said, how can you have a balanced news report when one side is lying and the other side is telling the truth? How can you have balance? And so he's saying there what many people understand, which is that to each story, there has to be it has to be held against the evidence. So let's see, if someone says something, that's not enough. You need to have the evidence to back it up. And that, I think, is what the monotheistic faiths are saying, is look, you've got to take one side, the side of good, the side of honesty, and particularly the side of human rights. And the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, things like the Geneva Conventions, how you fight your war. It does matter that you don't target civilians, that you don't target children. These things really do matter. And so this is why I think, you know, you've got Trump, other people. So, for example, Jonathan Cook, who's a writer here in Bristol for the Middle East Eye, and he's a former Guardian writer, is pointing out that that actually the BBC is really failing to test what's coming through each story, because they have a very strong pro-Zionist bias here in the BBC. Obviously, the Murdoch Empire does. Rupert Murdoch's got big investments in the Golan Heights in Israel, and he's very much wedded to this financial Zionist mafia. But you would expect a national broadcaster to be a little bit more balanced. So, I mean, I know that's a bit of a... I'd like to just read a quote out to you, though, finally, from Aleister Crowley, who's a famous British Satanist. And he is actually... It was actually speaking to the writer. The writer's name is Sax Rohmer. He's famous for the Fu Manchu novels, the Fu Manchu films in the 1960s. And he lived south of London, but he knew Crowley. And so many people have wondered, what is Crowley and his secret society, the Satanists called the Golden Dawn, really all about? Well, I'll explain it to you. He says, my power rests in the east, but my hand is stretched out to the west. I shall restore the lost grandeur of China. When your civilization, as you are pleased to term it, has exterminated itself, which looks like it may be happening, when you have reduced to ashes your palaces and your temples, when in your blindness you have set back the clock which so laboriously you fashioned, I shall stir. Out of the fire I shall rise. The red dusk of the west will have fallen, and the golden dawn of the east will come. Now, that's an extract from The Island of Fu Manchu by Sax Rohmer, who was in The Golden Dawn with Aleister Crowley, from Chapter 6, Dr. Fu Manchu's Experiments. That was written in 1941 during the Second World War. And so I think that's ultimately what we're dealing with here, is a battle of over faiths and religions, really, between fake versions of the monotheistic faiths and an overwhelming idea of balance, of yin yang, and the Hindu type faiths, which I think that the elite of the world are trying to use this battle in the Middle East in order to bring those faiths in and to really knock out the monotheistic faiths forever.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So, but for some time, if you move, if you keep theology aside, and if we get back to realpolitik, Tony, what we are witnessing is that the West is not really putting their heart and soul in this war, you know. And people, as you mentioned in your radio show day before yesterday, I believe yesterday, you said that the war in Iran is causing depression, and people are taking antidepressants and antipsychotic drugs, causing brain death and addiction. Now, President Trump is also complaining about the same thing. Trump also says that, well, you are not supporting me. And, it's quite obvious that the Western Hemisphere or the NATO allies are not actively part of this war against Iran. And they're not. And in fact, you see desperate pleas by Trump. If you read them, they're quite desperate. The way Trump is asking the NATO allies, the European allies, to be part of it. And then he's also at the same time, you know, trying to ridicule them, maybe trying to tell them that you have to come in. And then, you know, he's telling the Americans, and listen, NATO was only America. It was always America, and they are not, you know, being part of our war. So they should be part of this war. So definitely there is first desperation in Trump and America's messaging. What Pete Hegseth is saying, it's very desperate. But at the same time, the point you brought out, it's desperation and depression. So what's actually going on over there?
Well, look, the depression, I think, is not just about the Iran war. It's just about our leadership in Britain. I mean, particularly, obviously, in the United States too. Trump doesn't seem to be his energized self that he was when he was running for president, does he? He's looking very morose. And this is the rubber hitting the road, right? Because he's been having these discussions with his own family, Jared Kushner, etc., and some of his advisors and his cabinet, who many of whom are very pro-Zionist, pro-Israel. They've implanted people, and we can talk if you want about how the Israelis do this, how they've managed to get these people into these key positions in the United States, and Hegseth particularly. But so he is now having to almost do public relations for a bunch of a cabal behind the scenes, an Israel lobby behind the scenes, that has forced him into this position. So he's kind of been tricked, Trump. I look at him, I feel a bit sorry for him, as he's almost like thrashing around to try to match up what he has been advised and conned into doing. I don't think he would probably have done this completely on his own. And the news coming back from around the world, how his former allies are not supporting him. Look, this whole business of depression, I think, is quite an important one, because if you've got bad leaders, if you've got a country which is being run from abroad, this is depressing. People realise, actually, we're not able to, we may be voting, but we're getting nothing from it. We're being conned by the higher-ups. This is, you know, you start to behave a little bit like we did in medieval times, where you've got a load of barons who've got total power over you. They can execute you. They can stick you in jail. You know, this is before Magna Carta here in the UK. And it's just a feudal system. You have to do as you're told. And if your life is quite good and you have security of tenure, you have somewhere to live and you're not going to be evicted, then you may be able to get on with it. But as soon as you get to the stage where Britain is now, where we've got increasing food prices, horrific, the highest energy prices and rail travel prices in the world, and also incredibly high rents as well. So people start just to get depressed. And when they see that these foreign wars as well, you know, I think we just have to understand that there's something going on almost on a subconscious or an unconscious level in many people, that they're struggling with a form of angst. This is an anxiety. They're not quite sure where it's coming from, but they just don't feel right. They don't feel good. And there are all sorts of, you know, people may go to their doctors over this. I would suggest the best thing to do is actually go and talk to a vicar, a priest, or someone who's more spiritual, because the doctors will give you a pill which will alleviate the symptoms. Maybe, and it might actually get you addicted and might send you into a downward spiral, so be very careful about that. But you need to obviously address the cause of the depression. That's the way to deal with depression. And the spiritual types, the vicars, the imams, the rabbis are usually the best sort of people to do that. But depression is really, I think, as well, really important. The springtime is very important here in the Northern Hemisphere. It's a very important thing in our psyche. We don't think about it necessarily much, but at March, beginning of March, is when all the crocuses and the daffodils all start coming out, and it's like rebirth. It's like the days start getting longer again. And what does Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu do? Oh, they're starting World War III. Great. So, of course, this at a time of year where we should all be happy, we should all be feeling good, suddenly something else is going on and everyone starts to think, oh, my God, what are they doing? I mean, the support for this war in the UK is very low. There was a poll out a couple of days ago, a YouGov poll, saying the British don't even support the majority, quite a large majority of British people don't even support the Americans being allowed to use their US bases here in Britain to attack Iran and to supply Iran. They don't want the Americans using them at all. But what's happened is, because of the military failures, the naval failures of the United States and the problems that they're having in the Gulf states using their air bases and their aircraft carriers, they are now starting to use Britain as a springboard. Now, this is they have several big bases in Britain. In Norfolk, they've got Lakenheath and Mildenhall. That's in East Anglia, in the east of Britain, just north of London. And over here in the southwest, or the west of England, in Gloucestershire, near Wales, they've got a place called RAF Fairford. And they are blatantly, in front of all the plane spotters and the cameras, bringing in large transporter aircraft with loads of bombs. And they're loading up their B-1 bombers, and they're loading up their B-52 Stratocruisers. They're flying the U-2 spy flights out of Britain. And so, of course, this is Britain is being complicit with this. So although the Starmer government is saying we're not going to send our assets, we are allowing the Americans to use Britain as what they called in the 1980s. This was a very well-known phrase back then. There's even a book written by Duncan Campbell, the BBC journalist, called The Unsinkable Aircraft Carrier. And that is now what Britain has become. Is the aircraft carrier that the Iranians can't sink is Gloucestershire, United States Air Force Base, Fairford. And so, yeah, so this is also is worrying. It's, of course, it's depressing to know people who live around here don't want to be the target of a hypersonic missiles from Iran, which is quite feasible that we may be. We don't want to be in a conflict with the Russians either, which might mean hypersonic nuclear weapons hitting Fairford in Gloucestershire. So Britain is complicit, even though most of the world's press hasn't really focused on the loading of bombs day after day, the sorties day after day being flown out of the UK to attack targets in Iran for Donald Trump and ultimately really for Benjamin Netanyahu.
Finally, Tony, how much a part the Epstein files has to play, or the cover-up of the Epstein file has to play in this war?
Well, I would also like to mention the Rains List, which is a kind of UK version of the Epstein files, which has been floating around for quite a long time. Dr. Joan Coleman produced that. This was an anti-cult network, which was interviewing lots of survivors of these ritual abuse cults. And so I think there's a lot of focus on the Muslim grooming gangs in the press, but not much on these cults, which are largely based around London and the south of England rather than the north. And so that's well worth a look at too, because it gets forgotten in all the Epstein. But I mean, I don't really like calling it Epstein either, because actually the real mastermind was Ghislaine Maxwell. She recruited Jeffrey Epstein after she went to New York, and through some of her British connections too. Epstein was also introduced to high society in Britain here in Wiltshire, near Bradford-on-Avon, at a big country house at a party here, the sort of, highfalutin business. But you're quite right. This is, I think, a war by the Epstein class. You can see that there are a lot of people who were conniving together as if they were a sort of, I suppose, a world shadow government. But actually, of course, it's not the world. It's mainly just the West. And they're conniving to do things like help overthrow Putin on these emails that have been released. There's all sorts of interesting stuff on there. Very, very close to the Rothschilds family. That's most evident with the French branch of the Rothschilds. Lots and lots of banker details. So it looks to me as if the private banking systems through the Epstein networks have been financing this blackmail ring, this child sexual abuse ring, which is then being used to blackmail people. Now, who's actually running it? Well, it seems to me to be an Israeli Mossad-connected, MI6-connected, MI5-connected ring. Obviously, the FBI possibly involved too, but mainly it seems to have been the British and the Israelis seem to have been running it, controlling it. And then, of course, they're coming up with some of these characters who were benefiting from all this, even were going to Epstein deliberately. This is something that's not so well known. Epstein got known around about 2006-7-8 period, and from then on, as the person that you went to if you wanted to get a top job. So it's horrifying, but people would go to visit Epstein, would court Epstein, would go to his house, go to these parties, have sex, possibly be recorded having sex with underage girls or boys. And then they would suddenly find themselves in top jobs around the world. And this, they didn't care about the moral side to it. And they didn't really care about being blackmailed. They just knew that they were going to get in the limelight and they were going to get lots and lots of money. So this it shows just what human beings are really like. There are some people who don't care about the consequences. I mean, look at someone like Tony Blair. He launches an illegal war and then he still walks the streets. Now, he can't really walk the streets in Britain because he's so hated here, mistrusted. But there are some people who think that it's cool, almost like they have a teenage mentality. You know, they think it's cool to be bad and naughty and then to show off in front of all their friends about how bad and naughty they are. And they don't seem to care if they start World War III or bring us into Armageddon. That's the problem with the Epstein class. And so there are also revelations, I think, isn't it, about someone called Jane Doe or Jane, who she was introduced to Trump by Epstein at Mar-a-Lago. And she was interviewed by the FBI. These interviews didn't appear in the initial Epstein release, but they're now out due to the work of some. They said, oh, we thought it was duplicated, but they didn't release them in the Epstein. Now, this is quite an obvious problem in that with this girl who was age 13 at the time, she says that Trump forced her to have sex with him. And then there were consequences. And this is for Trump, this is potentially impeachable offence, isn't it? This is potentially going to bring him down. So there's a bit of blackmail material if we wanted to imagine what Netanyahu might be waving over Donald Trump's head to force him into this sort of Armageddon style war. So anyway, that's it in a nutshell. I think if you want to look at where it's all going, it's difficult to say. I honestly think this is one of those forever wars, a bit like when we saw the Russian soldiers march into Ukraine back in 2022. Some were saying, like Scott Ritter, by the way, oh, it'll just be a couple of weeks and they'll mop up. But no, this is another, I think, forever war they've started, very much like George Orwell predicted. And of course, the idea is the West are hoping to win the hearts and minds just through propaganda. But already that's coming a cropper. Donald Trump is failing to get the propaganda through that he's doing anything sensible, anything right. And by the way, as military people know, he doesn't have a plan. Bad, bad move, Donald.
That's true. That's true. Thank you. Thank you, Tony, for this riveting discussion. We wish we could continue, but in another episode, we'll invite you and we will continue this discussion. Thank you for the honest opinion. We really needed to have this dose of honesty. And if you think that you'll be standing on the right side of history, then you've got to be honest to yourself and to others. And that's the way.
Absolutely right. I would just say we do a weekly program on a Friday. It's live. There's something called the Bristol Politics Show. You can get the app through GitHub or best place to get it. You won't get it on Google Play because they've banned it. Get it on Apple. So it's called the Bristol Politics Show. And the website, if you want to go and have a look, have a listen to last week's or subscribe or whatever for free, it's thisweek.org.uk.
And ladies and gentlemen, the links are in the description of this video on Soldier Speaks Reloaded and Soldier Speaks English. Just look at the description and you can click the link and you'll find it all there. Thank you, Tony. Thank you so very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.